This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyesu Uhib in Washington, and some of the stories we'll be covering tonight on Africa News Tonight. Today is Africa Day, the day the Organization of African Unity formed in Addis Ababa in 1963, and the Africa Development Bank has approved $1.5 billion emergency food program for the continent. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. More than 70 people are missing after a boat crowded with migrants headed for Europe from Libya sank in the Mediterranean off neighboring Tunisia. National Guard spokesman Houssim Eden Djebabli told the French news agency AFP that the boat, which was carrying around 100 people when it started its journey, capsized off the Tunisian port of Safax, with Coast Guard and Navy units able to pull 24 people out of the water. He added that the migrants are of various African and Asian nationalities, and one body has been recovered so far. Libya has become a major launchpad for migrants seeking to reach Europe on what has become the world's deadliest migration route. And as we mentioned earlier, today is Africa Day, an opportunity to celebrate the continent's diversity and strength by highlighting its widely varied identity and culture. In a statement from the United Nations, President Abdullah Shahid says, "Africa has so much potential. It has both the human and technical resources to secure a brighter future for all its inhabitants." He added that African women are poised to play a greater role in driving sustainable agricultural practices in development and in achieving the African Union's vision of Agenda 2063. Shahid also pointed to the crucial role that African youths, who now number over 400 million, in driving innovation and preparing for tomorrow's challenges while taking part in decision-making today. The theme this year is malnutrition and food insecurity, major issues with drought, COVID-19, and the war in Ukraine hampering farming and cutting off imports of wheat from Russia and Ukraine. The African Development Today is Africa Day, as we mentioned, and the day on which the Organization of African Unity, now known as the African Union, was formed in Addis Ababa in 1963. The establishment of the OAU heralded the continent's freedom from colonialism. But analysts say Africa's far from economically free, with hundreds of millions of its people poor and hungry. Darren Taylor reports.
According to the World Vision Group, which monitors food security across the globe, almost 300 million Africans are undernourished. It says bad state policies, climate change, local conflicts, and the war in Ukraine are causing even greater hunger across the continent.
This day is supposed to be celebrating independence and unity. What the war in Ukraine has exposed is that we are not independent, but dependent, and not unified, but in conflict. I think part of the illusions that were exposed over the last 30 years is that simply proclaiming political independence does not make you independent.
Chris Alsobrook is director of the Center for Leadership Ethics in Africa at South Africa's Fort Hare University. He says when it comes to food security and nutrition, Africa's a long way from being sovereign, even in countries that in the past were recognized breadbaskets of the continent.
For instance, 70% of Kenyans are feed insecure, 70% drop in crops with climate change problems. Egypt, 80% of Egypt's grain came from the Black Sea region before this war. it's caused a serious problem. And in fact, because of food security problems up the Nile in Ethiopia, they've dammed up half the Nile recently. And so there's increasingly dire prospects in Egypt for them to feed themselves and to remain in any sense independent.
Also, Brooke says even South Africa, the continent's second biggest maize producer after Nigeria, is sleepwalking into problems. He explains that the country isn't producing enough food and is in even bigger trouble because of the war in Eastern Europe. A quarter of its grain came from Ukraine, and it remains dependent on the rest of the world for half its required wheat. It's also Brooke's opinion that Africa's hungry largely because its people want what he calls the wrong foods.
We've become dangerously dependent on wheat and maize. We don't eat enough vegetables. You'll find we have large tracts of land that are either sugar or canola oil. And these things have gone through the roof. They're massive staples. We need to rely on more variety. We can grow more vegetables. We don't feed ourselves, but we can. We have the land and enough water and resources to feed ourselves. But it depends on less dependence on highly concentrated agribusiness and government, and more variety in our diets.
Partly to combat the fallout from the war in Ukraine, South Africa's government recently announced what it calls an agricultural master plan worth more than $1 billion to boost food production. But based on previous plans, says also Brooke, he's skeptical of government intervention.
It's often very incompetent. And as soon as the state responds, it often involves tenders. And as soon as there's tenders, the money just dries up. It's a mistake to believe you can just throw money at the problems. It's about disciplined cooperation. I think it's this problem of dependence, seeing the state as a solution and not us as the state.
He believes that Africa's ever-present and growing food crisis reveals many Africans are at the mercy of often incompetent and corrupt governments as much as they rely on international food aid. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The African Development Bank has approved a $1.5 billion emergency food program to tackle worsening food insecurity on the continent. The decision comes as bank leaders meet in Ghana to weigh future options. For VOA, Kent Mensah in Accra speaks to experts about the move and what more can be done to ease the food crisis.
Addressing the media in Accra, African Development Bank AFDB Group President Akinwumi Adesina said the continent now faces a shortage of at least 30 million tons of food as a result of the Russia-Ukraine war. He said a new AFDB initiative will provide 20 million African farmers with certified seeds and fertilizers to increase crop yields.
To now tackle the looming food crisis in Africa from the Russian-Ukraine war, the African Development Bank develop an African Emergency Food Production Plan collaboratively with the African Union Commission. The $1.5 billion plan will be used to support African countries to produce food and do so rapidly.
Adesina said the plan aims to produce 38 million tons of food, including 18 million tons of maize, 11 million tons of wheat, 6 million tons of rice, and 2.5 million tons of soybean. Prices of key foods such as wheat and bread have soared over 100% in Africa since Russia attacked Ukraine and exports from Ukrainian farms plummeted. The war has also affected supplies of fertilizer. Daniel Amate is an economist with the Accra-based Policy Initiative for Economic Development. He said the AFDB's intervention is timely.
A step in the right direction because it will help the various economies within the continent to quickly resort to other economies where they could easily get products that they used to get from Ukraine and Russia, and by virtue of the war they couldn't have procured such materials, and as a result it's affecting food sustainability in some part of the continent.
However, Amate said African countries should rethink their agricultural policies and invest in the long term.
Going into the medium to long term perspective, I think what ought to be done by the various economies or by the various governments on the continent is to invest hugely into agri. and not only the production of food, but the processing of food and also storage of food. So that investment is very critical to ensure that any external shock that may emerge may not affect food sustainability on the continent.
Joseph Opoku-Gakpo is a member of the Ghana Association of Agricultural and Rural Development Communicators. He told VOA in a text message that the bank's programs do not solve the immediate problem of hunger. This will not make any difference, Gakpo said. Food prices will continue to rise. The impact of this investment will not be seen until 2023. What we actually need now, he said, is a lot of food aid. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Amnesty International says last year saw a worrying increase in the number of executions and death sentences in Africa, with South Sudan and Somalia leading the trend. The rights watchdog is calling for a moratorium on executions and is urging countries that still allow the death penalty to abolish it. Nabil Biagio has this report from Washington.
Amnesty International says the number of executions and death sentences rose globally as courts returned to conducting business in person following the easing up of COVID-19 restrictions. In its annual report of the death penalty released on Tuesday, the overall number of recorded executions more than doubled in East and Southern Africa, especially in Somalia and South Sudan. Oluwatosin Popula is a death penalty advisor at Amnesty International.
A sharp rise in recorded executions in Somalia and South Sudan was the reason why the overall number of recorded executions in sub-Saharan Africa more than doubled from 16 in 2020 to 33 in 2021. Recorded executions in Somalia rose from 11 to 21, and in South Sudan from 2 to 9. In Botswana, Amnesty International recorded the execution of three people, the same number as in 2020.
Popula says underlying factors and beliefs underscore the adherence of some countries to the death penalty as a legal punishment.
They include the arbitrary use of the death penalty, the lack of respect for human rights, bad judicial systems, and the erroneous belief that the death penalty has a deterrent effect on crime, which is not true.
Amnesty says exercising the death penalty in Somalia, South Sudan and Botswana goes against regional trends in sub-Saharan Africa and the rest of the world, where many countries are moving away from the practice. The report says while 33 executions were recorded in Botswana, Somalia and South Sudan last year, the overwhelming majority of African countries that have not yet abolished the death penalty for all crimes, which include Kenya, Malawi, Uganda, Zambia and Zimbabwe, did not carry out executions. Popola says South Sudan carried out more executions in 2021 compared to the year before, and more people were sentenced to death.
The number of recorded executions in South Sudan rose sharply from 2 in 2020 to 9 in 2021. The number of death sentences also rose in the country from at least 6 to at least 10. At least 334 people were held under sentence of death at the end of the year in South Sudan.
Efforts to reach Ben Gideon Mabor, the commissioner at South Sudan's Human Rights Commission, for comment were unsuccessful. The Amnesty report says recorded death sentences were up by 22%, with a sharp rise in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where 81 people were put to death in 2021 compared to 20 in the previous year. It says there was progress towards the abolition of the death penalty in Sierra Leone, Ghana, the Central African Republic, and other African countries. Popola says Amnesty opposes the death penalty in all cases regardless of the nature of the crime or the guilt or innocence of the perpetrator. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The United States has voiced alarm over Ethiopia's targeting of journalists in a sweep of arrests in the northern Amhara region. State Department spokesman Nate Price told reporters that the U.S. is deeply concerned about the narrowing space for freedom of expression and independent media in Ethiopia, including a troubling increase in reports of harassment, detentions, arrests of journalists, media professionals, and activists. He said the U.S. strongly urges the Ethiopian government and regional authorities to uphold the rule of law and provide all applicable procedural safeguards for any individuals arrested. According to the French news agency AFP, media companies are complaining that at least 9 of their workers have been arrested. 2 other outlets covering Ethiopian affairs on YouTube said their studios were raided in recent days. Authorities in Amhara, the second most populous region in Ethiopia, said more than 4,000 people suspected of crimes have been arrested in an ongoing enforcement operation. Ethiopia is historically an ally of the United States, but President Joe Biden has increasingly applied pressure, including suspending valuable trading privileges, over the government's rights record in the war that broke out in late 2020 with Tigrayan rebels. World-renowned gynecologist and Nobel Prize laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege says stories and allegations of wartime rape coming out of Ukraine resemble those in Ethiopia's Tigray region and his home country of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And he says the international community should respond equally fast to all these conflicts. Mukwege runs the Panzi Hospital and Foundation, which he founded in his childhood hometown of Bukavu in eastern DRC. He and his team have treated tens of thousands of survivors of sexual violence. Mukwege has been touring the United States to promote his memoir, which brings attention to his work treating women with injuries and trauma from wartime rape. He sat down recently with Heidi Adams, host of Straight Talk Africa. She began by asking him about the message behind his book.
This book is the result of my 25 years working with women in a conflict area in the Republic Democratic of Congo in Panzi Hospital. And what I could witness with in treating women is really that women are strong. And I can see that the resilience of women is really out of all the things that we can imagine. When I receive them after to be raped with extreme violence, and when I say extreme violence, it means that some of them are coming at the hospital with all their genitals destroyed. They have wounded in a very, very bad way. But when women stand up after to be treated, they didn't stand for themselves. They are standing for them and for their children, for the family. And for me, this is really wonderful. If the society can't protect them, but when they got healing and stand up, they stand up and raise their voice for all the community. This for me is wonderful. And I think that I just feel that I should really do a testimony about my journey and show how women are strong, even if sometimes our system, in patriarchal system, won't just to silence them.
Dr. Mukwege, when you hear stories and allegations of sexual violence against women during a time of conflict coming out of places like Ethiopia's Tigray region or Ukraine, what is your message to the international community?
This war that started in February, our team was already in contact with women in Donbass who were raped in 2014 when Russia invaded for the first time Ukraine. I'm so touched to see that the international community can react very fast and put all the means. It's really how the international community should react in each conflict, because suffering is universal. And the reaction against this suffering or to take care of the suffering people should be also universal. And I think that the case of Ukraine show us that if when there is a willing, we have capacity to stop atrocities. And this is a good example to say we can do the same in Ethiopia. We can do the same in Yemen, in Democratic Republic of Congo, and everywhere, just to think that we are sharing the same humanity.
You can watch Heidi's full interview with Dr. Mukwege on the next edition of Straight Talk Africa. Like many other countries in recent weeks, Zimbabwe has experienced price hikes and a shortage of basic foodstuffs on supermarket shelves due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and other factors. In an effort to ease high prices, the government has made imports of certain items duty-free, but experts worry this solution comes with its own set of problems. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more.
A new statute waives duties normally paid on basic goods being imported into Zimbabwe. These include margarine, salt, milk powder, baby formula, rice, petroleum jelly, flour, sugar, soap, and toothpaste. Victor Boroma is a Zimbabwean economist.
The intention to say we need to address the price of basic commodities, the intention good. But what is done now to address that particular problem?
While these basic goods can be sourced from anywhere in the world, neighboring South Africa is the country of choice for many, which Boroma says is where the problem lies.
When you look at it, Zimbabwe is quite a small economy. And when you compare our industrial capacity to South Africa, we are way, way very small, probably more or less 5% of what South Africa can be able to produce. Ideally, you would want a situation where you relax duty on raw materials that are used to manufacture those particular commodities.
Boroma says authorities must dialogue with manufacturers to understand the cost involved and ensure that such incentives benefit consumers. Munyaradzi Wengwere is with Buy Zimbabwe, a long-standing campaign run by business owners who have been pushing for priority of locally grown and manufactured products in the marketplace.
For instance, sugar, that has the effect it may damage the local industry. But those products that we don't produce anyway as a country, it is a balancing effect. It is a balancing effect because those products are not from Zimbabwe anyway. The only concern that we have as by Zimbabwe is that there are some products on the SI that should not have been on the SI because those goods are produced in Zimbabwe.
SI refers to statutory instrument. The current SI, which suspends duties on basic goods, is expected to last until November 16th. While some manufacturers fear the waiver will have a negative impact on their industry, retailers and consumers welcome the move. In the past, Zimbabwean manufactured products have struggled to compete with imported South African products. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi.
And please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our engineer, Zainab Abdurrahman, thanks for listening to The Voice of America.
The best music comes from Africa. And African Beat gives you the best of the best. From Benga to Juju, Hip Life to Bunga Flavor, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. All happening right here on the African Beat of the Voice of America. Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. With me, your host, David Vandy.